Hello, everyone. I'm Therese Bottomley, editor of The Oregonian and Oregon Live. This is Beat Check with The Oregonian. Today, I'm talking to reporter Aimee Green about her recent article on Oregon's drug courts. Aimee, welcome back to Beat Check.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So first of all, just to kind of set the stage for people, what exactly are drug courts?
Drug courts are a division of the court system where people who commit crimes fueled by their drug addictions get a chance to get treatment and get better, heal in their lives. And the hope is that they won't go back and commit new crimes. And I should also say that sometimes the crimes historically that people were committing that got them enrolled in drug courts were the crimes of drug possession or tampering with prescription records. And those currently are no longer, at least I should say drug possession is no longer a crime. But if the governor signs the legislature's recent action, it will once again be a crime to possess street drugs in small amounts.
So yeah, let's go back to that. How did the passage of Measure 110, and 110 being the voter-approved measure that decriminalized certain drugs, how did Measure 110 change the operation of drug courts in Oregon?
So there are various types of drug courts. They originally started in Oregon in 1991 in Multnomah County. It was the second drug court in the nation after a drug court in Florida. And that drug court was tailored specifically toward people who were caught possessing drugs illegally. And over the years, drug courts grew across the nation in Oregon, and they began to offer treatment to people charged with other crimes, like property crimes, stealing cars, burglary. And in more recent years, at least in Multnomah County, drug courts expanded to treat people charged with Measure 11 crimes, so much more serious crimes, violent crimes. And when Measure 110 was passed, the last of the drug courts that just dealt with people charged with drug possession, those died away, and the remaining drug courts carried on, albeit at a lower capacity level, not because of Measure 110, but because of limited funding. But Measure 110, because it made it a violation and not a misdemeanor crime to possess drugs, basically killed those drug possession drug courts because there was no leverage. There was no way to, I guess one could say strong arm people into drug courts because all they faced was a $100 ticket that they may or may not pay if they didn't go to drug court. Whereas before, they could get a misdemeanor conviction and they could get some jail time.
So the carrot and stick approach, that would be the stick. You've got to do this or you're going to have this on your record. And the burglary and robbery and so forth, the thinking being that the people were stealing to fuel their drug habits, I take it.
Yeah. And there was a lot of support for drug courts over the years. Initially, I would say that the prosecutors were cold to the idea, thinking, why would we let anybody, any criminal, into a drug court, giving them a chance to avoid a conviction and avoid responsibility, jail time, or prison for their crimes. And over time, the thinking changed because people began to see drug addiction as more of a health issue than a criminal issue. And I think DAs began to see the benefits that these are people who really don't want to be living a lifestyle of committing crimes or even just being addicted to drugs. It's torture. We've seen lots of success stories where people are able to heal their lives, heal their families, and be productive and contributing members of society.
So you mentioned the legislature has intervened on Measure 110. So what exactly did the legislature change?
One of the things that it did in this recent package is it said, we are now going to make drug possession a misdemeanor, a new type of unclassified misdemeanor, where people could be sentenced to up to 6 months in jail for possessing small amounts of street drugs. Whereas before, under Measure 110, it was a $100 ticket that my understanding is hardly anyone paid. So it was a return to what happened before Measure 110 took effect in February 2021. It was a different classification of misdemeanor, but it will be a misdemeanor again if the governor signs the legislation.
And we're recording this on Wednesday, so we'll see by Monday when this publishes if the governor has signed that. So you talked about the people who had gone through drug courts and who had turned their life around. There's kind of a support system wrapped around people in the drug courts. It's not the same as going in front of a judge with a lawyer and there's a prosecutor. There's more of a support system. So talk a little bit about the people you talked to who'd gone through it and what their experience was like.
My first experience with seeing drug courts was about 15 years ago, probably a little more than 15 years ago in Multnomah County Circuit Court. I was the courts reporter and I was invited to a graduation, which usually comes at least a year, maybe a year and a half after someone's entered drug court. And it was an amazing experience. I mean, it was very refreshing to see something so positive happening in the court system. Usually I would go to courtrooms and just see a lot of tragedy and see people sentenced sometimes to probation, sometimes to jail, oftentimes to prison. And it would be the judge, the defense attorney, and the prosecutor there. And victims there, not a happy day, but something that was determined to be necessary based on the crime that was committed. So when I went to drug court, the room was crowded. This is a graduation, people coming to support their loved ones who are graduating. But even on a normal day, the room would be crowded with drug court participants, their drug and alcohol support counselors, usually a public defender, a prosecutor there, anybody who helps with the treatment or counseling might be in the room or within a phone call if there were any questions. And it was a very supportive environment where there would be back and forth conversations. How are you asking the person, the drug court participant, how are you doing? What kind of struggles have you had? What kind of successes have you had? Did you go to your appointments? I see that you got a clean urine test. Congratulations. They would give out gift cards to like Starbucks or at that time, Macy's, little rewards to people. And there was a lot of clapping and cheers when people did well. And when people didn't do well and they were struggling, there would be frank discussions about how can we make this better.
And when you talk about that support and the gift cards and everything and the added people taking part in the support system, I mean, is this more expensive than a traditional route or does it pencil out because you're keeping people out of the prisons?
Yeah, I think if you just look at a specific case, like a one-time case, someone's charged with drug possession or let's even say a higher level case, which became much more common, much more what drug courts were tailored to in later, more recent years. Someone's charged with a crime and they're sentenced to probation. It's not that expensive, especially if it's a lower level crime and there's not much supervision on probation. They're ordered to get drug treatment and that may be it. Or let's say they spend some time in jail and then they're let out. That could end up costing less than a whole year and a half long drug court experience where someone is offered, offered housing, and drug drug treatment, which may be inpatient drug treatment, which can be expensive. All the staff, all the people that it takes to oversee drug court or deal with the participant, help them out over the course of months on an individual basis. That is very expensive. But the idea is that it stops the cycle of this person going through the system. And I think there's other ways of determining value too, which is Portland, for example, has a big problem with people using drugs on the street very visibly. And it's one of the reasons that downtown is really suffering and people don't feel safe and want to go downtown. That's a cost that we all pay. And if that person can be taken off the street and, they're not visibly there, people maybe feel safer in downtown. And that person maybe, if they were committing other crimes like stealing to support their habit, maybe they aren't doing that anymore. And that's seen as a value.
So now that the carrot and stick is back to the stick of the misdemeanor, what happens next? How are these drug courts going to get restarted? And will most counties restart these drug courts?
Yeah, I think there are a number of drug courts out there. At the beginning of this biennium, so 2023, there were 55 drug courts in Oregon. I should say treatment courts, because some of them are viewed more as a treatment court where they offer maybe drug treatment, but they might offer mental health treatment. These would be for maybe people who were charged with crimes that it's determined maybe it's a mixture of mental health and drug treatment that's needed. Oftentimes they're intertwined. So anyway, there's 55 of these treatment courts across Oregon, but many of them have been operating at reduced capacity because they don't have the same funding over the past 10 years. The amount of funding from the state for these drug treatment courts has remained relatively flat. When you count for inflation, it really is flat. And there's just been more demand for these types of services. So the hope is that with the legislature approving about a 50% boost to funding to these courts, these programs, that they'll be able to increase the number of people that they're helping. And some of the drug courts that have closed down in recent months and years, maybe they'll restart. Some of these drug courts were treating people who committed those property crimes or the higher level of crime. There's also a hope among some that maybe some of these lower level drug courts that just worked with people who were addicted to drugs but hadn't committed any other crime but possessing drugs, maybe those will restart. There's a bit of controversy about whether that's the best way to spend money or not.
Yeah, speaking of controversy, you mentioned at the beginning that some prosecutors originally weren't sure about this program. I don't know if there are still critics who think that the system is coddling, lawbreakers. So talk about the critics of drug courts and what their objections are.
Yeah, it's funny. Every judge and every prosecutor I spoke to, and I spoke to several of each, was very supportive of drug courts, different than maybe a couple decades ago. Also, in speaking to defense attorneys, I would say in general, they're very supportive of drug courts, at least at the mid to higher levels. So the drug courts that are trying to get people housing and treatment, drug and mental health treatment for property crimes like stealing cars. There are people who think that there are dangers to creating drug courts for people who've been possessing drugs and committed no other crimes. Usually people in that category are not people who've had a ton of criminal justice system involvement. maybe their only problems are that when it was illegal to possess street drugs in small amounts, they were caught with the drugs, or that maybe they've been using on a TriMet bus or on a sidewalk, and that's it. And the worry is that they will mix with higher level offenders in the criminal justice system, and maybe their behavior will escalate. So it's very important for the people who organize drug courts to divide people up and not have lower level offenders mixed with higher level offenders. So that is a criticism, that if that happens, if there is a mixture, that that could lead to an escalation in illegal behaviors by the people who were just originally only possessing drugs. I also talked to a woman who had been through drug possession court in Multnomah County. So she had only been, and this was about 10 years ago or so, she had only been caught possessing drugs, and she went through drug court voluntarily. I mean, everybody has to sign on and say, yes, I want to do this. And she ended up having a very bad experience. She wasn't able to kick her drug addiction. But I think part of the program, my interpretation of what happened is that she didn't get a lot of support in that lower level drug court. It wasn't well funded. She didn't get housing. She didn't get inpatient drug treatment paid for. She had private insurance, and when that ran out, she didn't get any more treatment. She ended up going on to continue to use drugs. Someone she met in jail, like I was saying, a higher level offender. She met this person in jail and ended up, she says, working with that person to sell drugs to a good friend of hers who overdosed and died. And she ended up serving time in federal prison. So that was not a success story, but I could see early on how things went wrong with the lack of support for her.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting voice to include. And then you also had a couple of individuals who had really great outcomes. One, I remember striking, he kept copies of his mugshots, you know, in front of him to remind him of how far he'd come. So you found a couple of people who also had good results.
Yeah, I mean, and it's actually, I found not difficult to find so many people who've had great experiences in drug court, because I think they're willing to talk about them. Many of them have gone on to be drug and alcohol counselors or in the support system for people in recovery, and they want to talk about how their lives changed. I mean, how the one thing that finally worked, it wasn't being put on probation, it wasn't being sent to jail or prison, it wasn't their families pleading and begging with them to get off drugs, it wasn't losing their homes and living on the streets that helped them get off drugs. It was that they were finally offered a ton of supports, and they were fed up with their lifestyle, and they got help from drug court. It was the thing that worked. It was seeing a judge, sometimes often as once a week, and that becoming not friends with the judge, but having a really great relationship with the judge, knowing the judge cared, knowing that all these support people in drug court cared, and they were there to help them through it, and not totally just kick them out when they had relapses. Because I think most people addicted to drugs, they do have relapses in their recovery, and you know, help the system set up to help them work through those bumps that they run into.
Well, excellent reporting. I'll share the link to Aimee's story in the episode notes. And with that, we'll call it a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like this show, give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. Tell a friend and help spread the word. The best way to support our journalism and stories like this one is with a subscription to Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time.